Hello and welcome into the latest edition of the Rebel Room. I'm Taylor Byrne alongside Case Kiefer and Ray Brewer, breaking down the week in UNLV athletics, focusing mostly on men's basketball and football. The football team returning from a bye week. They host Boise State on Halloween at home, 12:32 p.m. on ESPNU. So no bonus money for that appearance, just a home game against a Boise State team that's certainly taken a hit from where they were 2 weeks ago when we were looking at this game of potentially whether it would be picked up by an ESPN or ESPN2. Both UNLV's loss at Fresno State and Boise's loss that same night against Utah State certainly hurt the prospects of what this game would mean. But before we get into that, we got to talk about the Running Rebel Madness event downtown. The highlights from that, some of them appeared on ESPNU's Midnight Madness when Seth Greenberg incorrectly stated that this was on the Strip. It was downtown, the Las Vegas Downtown Convention Center. I'm pretty sure I screwed up that name, but I got it right in the story, and that's the only time that fact-checking really matters. But just a really cool setting for the event. I know Ray took Nicholas down there. Was it just the two of you that went down, or did the whole fam of four go take a trip?
Oh, no. Grandpa made it as well. Oh,
all right.
He was entertaining his, you know, my dad. He's
was he just there to heckle Dave Rice?
The man from start to finish, like, oh, Jordan Cornish made 8 out of 10 three-pointers. Well, put a hand in his face during the game, and he's not going to make it. Just, you know, glass half full, half empty from start to finish. And my father absolutely hates downtown.
So this is a great combination for him.
He stopped flying about 20 years ago, drives everywhere, like to Columbus and back.
Columbus, Ohio, that is.
Ohio. He said he'd rather fly than go downtown again.
Is this where you get all of your hate of Vegas's non-existent traffic problems?
Possibly. It's just, we parked at the event I thought was great. We parked at Binion's, and there's like on Fremont Street, like music and people dancing, and there was like
Tupac's down there every once in a while.
Yeah, there's a few girls with like topless with pasties on that, you know, I had.
Yeah, but that's a new thing. It sounds like he's hated downtown.
Yeah,
for a long
time. He has. We don't want to debate downtown, but anyways. Yeah, I took my kid and my dad.
Way more importantly, what did Nicholas think of it? We care way more about the upcoming generation.
That's true.
Of the pasties? No. Love the fireworks, I think, like any four-year-old would. And love the popcorn and the 7-Up that tasted like water with flavoring. And that was about it. It was by 6:30, would you say, Taylor? Nowhere to sit.
Yeah, I mean, almost immediately.
Yeah, so when we show up at 6:45, we're out of luck. So you got a senior and a toddler walking the whole time. We made it through the three-point contest and a little bit of the slam dunk contest. But great concept, great idea. Can't overstate how awesome it was. Had some slow spots, like...
Which is always the biggest problem with these events is the transitions. Case, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I think late night in the fog, which is Kansas's and is known, you know, as one of the best nationally, they bring out all kinds of recruits, Zimmerman and Troy Brown, I think, have been there recently. It's like, you know, this huge thing and everybody remembers the highlights. When you're just sitting through it, it's a slog, man. It's like 2 hours. A lot of the, like, routines and stuff just kind of fall flat. Like, the best 10 minutes of it are amazing. And the rest is very, I could do without.
I haven't been to any of these UNLV ones, and actually I only ever went to Late Night at the Fog at KU once. So I always had different stuff I was covering. I think I was on the road with football 1 year, had high school football another. But I must just have a selective memory, because I remember it being like the biggest, like I could not believe the spectacle it was. And I just remember thinking, like, there are like all these NBA players now currently in there that they're recruiting at the time. I remember thinking, like, how would you not just commit on the spot?
Oh, yeah. It's a really cool, like I said, I think the best parts are what you come away from it with. And the way I was tying this into UNLV is I think it's the transitions, getting from each little bit to bit, or now we're doing the introduction. That's where these things really slow down. And I felt like UNLV, for the most part, did that pretty well. It was a fairly short, you know, about an hour and a half total, which is, I think, all you really want out of that. The dunk contest with the guys that they have, obviously the highlight, the way that they introduced Derek Jones after being doubtful or questionable that he was going to participate. They announced it as only three dunkers, and then after the first round, like, and a fourth, and he comes up from the bench. The whole, like, I thought that played well. He started it off with dunking over three people, which I joked afterward with him, and he kind of confirmed, like, he can just go to that dunk. Like, that's just – he's done it over four people before. It's one of the things he's known for. That's just, like, something that he pulls out of his pocket. And, yeah, he vaulted over Zimmerman a little bit, who ducked his head a little bit. But that thing was awesome. Probably not even the best dunk of the night, although what I thought was probably his best got a couple of eights from the judges, which is the biggest travesty of the whole thing. Judges were Carolyn Goodman, Tina Kunzer-Murphy, Bryce Harper, and Freddie Banks. And not enough respect, I think, for going like a three-quarters court run-up, going off the logo, either through his legs or behind his back and finishing. I think people expected it to be from the free throw line or something. He's getting dinged for that, but that wasn't what the dunk was. I don't know. That's my rant there. But overall, I thought it was a really good event, planned and executed pretty well. The most important thing is that the visuals coming out of it were great. It just looked amazing, and that's looking towards the future, what you can sell, and parlaying that into their little NBA combine event Friday and Saturday. I think that's a great stretch for UNLV recruiting, which is, I think, ultimately where this matters more. But for the few thousand people that attended, I think you got pretty much what you wanted out of a free event there.
Yeah, good time had by all. The venue was awesome. It was great for the players. Great publicity on social media. The slam dunker. Do you know who he reminds me of?
Derek Jones?
Yeah.
No. Let's see where this is going to go.
The slam dunker. I like that.
Well, I'm going to talk about another good UNLV slam dunker of all time.
Okay.
Chris Richardson. He played during the Bano era. High flyer. Google the name. He played for the Globetrotters after UNLV. Died, unfortunately, young death at like 28. And I'm interested to see what Rebel fans out there say. I think Derek probably is and it's tough to tell right now because, granted, he hasn't played a game. But I think Chris pretty much could dunk, and he was real lanky, and he struggled doing much else than that because he got pushed around a lot. But he was a great person. I mean, off the charts leaps. I think Derek is probably going to be – I think he could play defense right now for him. And I don't know if I'm going to be wrong on that, but from what I think he could play some D, and I think he might be a more well-rounded player. But just straight dunking and the excitement when you're about to dunk, I think anytime this Derek gets the ball in the open court, people are going to be like, oh, throw it home. Please throw it home.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Chris Richardson. My sense on being here for a long time.
Yeah. Obviously, you don't know kind of how his role is going to fit, and considering all the highlights, everything that people know about Jones at this point is his dunking. I think in the system, the way that they're trying to play right now, he's going to have a great chance to succeed. It's just a question of being able to actually fill out that potential to be able to physically and mentally put it together, because that's something where I think, you know, Dwayne Morgan also kind of has the athleticism, the long body, could potentially succeed in it, but I don't know if it's going to come together for him. I think Jones is probably already has a better chance as far as rotation minutes and all that go, but there's so much to be figured out with that because we have 12 eligible guys. Chris Obegpa is the one scholarship player who's we know is going to be redshirting this year, so that leaves 12 scholarship guys, and I'm not sure who's expecting to be out of the rotation. You know, I know who my like picks for who's going to kind of fall down for the minutes, but which of these players looks at this and says, yeah, I know I'm not going to get major minutes this year?
I've been down on Dwayne Morgan for a while. To me...
But there's no chance he thinks he's out of it.
Oh, I thought you meant who the coaches think.
But first, I'm saying, like, because there's usually, if you've got 12, 13 players, whatever, you can see there's like seven or eight that are kind of in this one group, and then there's a few that are in the second group. Who's clearly in the second group out of this team? Who would you say? So I guess let's make who's that second group?
Daquan Cook.
Wow, just botched that completely.
Daquan Cook, for sure.
Daquan Cook, the former Ohio State, Miami Heat. Oklahoma City Thunder guard?
Yes, we get it, Case. They have the same name.
No, but he's not Daquan, right?
Daquan.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant because Brewer pronounced it wrong.
Well, he, I think, botched both names. I'm Quiuk. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't hear the last name.
I was
just
drinking inside coffee in my mouth, all right?
Okay.
Cook,
I agree with that.
Is 8 through 10.
But he's the one who I think is probably okay with that. And that's not – I don't think he would come right out and say that, but I think he understands probably athletically and all this a step below whatever he can – whatever role he can fill to help the team, I think he's going to be happy doing that, happy accepting his role.
He's a program guy, and I loved his selfie dance when he came out. I thought it was very creative for whatever it's worth. I think for me, if you go 1 through –
12.
Okay, Perez is 11 and 12 is star.
No, those are 13 and 14.
Oh, they're
walk-ons.
13 and 14.
We're talking about scholarship players.
Oh, scholarship. Well, I think Cook is 12 then. Is that fair?
And that's where I would.
Okay, and then, well, the kid from St. John's is 15, right?
Yeah, he's not eligible.
Okay.
I did not think that this was that complicated.
Well, I don't think then Morgan would be 11. I think the Green is probably 11. Are we on the same page?
I mean, that's in the conversation.
You smiled like you might agree. People didn't see your physical reaction. They're hearing you.
I got to give Brewer credit since you say we always team up against you. I don't know the team as well as you guys do, but as soon as he posed this question, I was looking at the roster in front of me, and I was thinking Cook and Green were the two guys. Maybe I just don't know as much about them, but they were the first two guys that came to my mind and the first two guys that came to your mind. So we're in total agreement.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's most likely. But I guess the point to me is that's going to be a blow to Green, who expects to come in and get minutes. He may have more of a realistic one on it. But let's say Morgan or Cornish fall down into that group. I think they both expect 20-plus minutes this year, and it's not going to happen. Like, there's going to be a couple of players who expect a big role and don't accept kind of where they end up. You know, I think that's just the type of roster that you're dealing with. And that's why I think this style works to build that or to take advantage of the perceived depth and the athleticism that we think they have. And that's where I think a Derrick Jones could end up filling a huge role and playing really well and it clicks, or he could just completely fall out of it. And it's just so tough to say right now. But I would put Jones up there in kind of the top 6-7-ish, whereas Morgan, I think, is more likely to fall down to that bottom group.
Wow. I mean, that kid was a top 30 recruit, Dwayne Morgan, right?
He was like top 30 or top 40.
Yeah,
around there.
I think his thing is, at least last year for me, was confidence-related. Offensive.
Well, to me, it's decision-making, which I guess could be tied into the same.
That he's afraid to make a mistake, maybe, but I just thought that he was so – listen, the transition from one level to the next, whether it's high school to college, college to the pros, is always going to be complicated, and it's going to be – there's a curve for whichever athlete you're talking about. I think his curve was probably more steep than McCaw, maybe even Cornish or Goodluck. And not having success for the first time, He didn't deal with it well. He forced himself into some bad shots, as you said, decision-making. And I just think offensively, he's a step behind offensively. Every time he shoots the ball, to me, I'm like, oh, God, why did you take that shot? To me. Now, like when Ben Carter shoots the ball, it looks like he's in absolute misery pain. It's kind of awkward, right?
I wouldn't say that, but okay.
No.
He looks like he's in pain.
When you watch him in the three-point contest,
yeah,
it looked like he was like – it just looked awkward. It wasn't like the smooth stroke. It kind of looked like he had a back pain with it.
I think you're projecting on that one, but maybe. I could be wrong.
My opinion, but back to Morgan, every time he shoots the ball, it looks like he thinks he's going to miss it.
Why then, though, and maybe this is a stupid question, but it seems – you're celebrating –
What is this celebration?
You're celebrating
this
point,
weird.
But what about to me? You're saying that he had this huge curve in his first year, and it's going back to a lot about last year. What's to say that the curve isn't more steep for Jones in that kind of same role, and then Morgan has an advantage of having been there in whole offseason, having practice?
Care to respond?
In Morgan's credit, he is more put together, better than Jones. Is that fair to say?
What?
He's bigger, stronger. You got to be strong.
No.
You don't?
No.
In basketball?
I'm saying Dwayne Morgan does not have a physical advantage on Derrick Jones.
Really?
No.
Is Jones a better player than Morgan, do you think? Potentially?
For the system this year? I think this year he's going to be, yes.
Boy.
I think we're going to find out. I mean, this is the interesting competition, right? Would this be
one of them, yeah. But that's the thing. Like, the way they built the roster, the way they're trying to do certain things is, okay, you've got guys who can play 2 through 5 or 1 through 4, you know, kind of positionless. We can funnel them in a lot of different ways. And so you could view it as a Morgan and Jones are competing for minutes at the same spot, or I kind of take the bigger view on it and say there's this many minutes cut up between the whole group, and there's just going to be so many different factors that, sure, 1v1 battles are going to end up determining a couple of spots. But overall, I think, okay, if you can't beat out – it's not Derrick Jones versus Dwayne Morgan. It's Jones versus Morgan, McCaw, probably not Seegers necessarily, but a few different guys that, if you can beat them, you can beat someone for minutes at the 2, the 3, the 4 to be the better backup. There's a lot of different ways to go. But I just think once we get down to this, I think Morgan is going to be one of the guys who loses more of those battles.
Yeah, and I really like that. I'm glad you said that. I guess just since I'm not as close, I didn't realize that it was to that extent here. But, I mean, that's just the direction basketball is moving in. I mean,
yeah.
It's a much larger trend, and I think that that's an advantage to your team. So if that's happening, I think that's a good thing. But I do think ultimately these two guys, probably only one of them is going to play the role they want, I guess.
I like the Rebels' backcourt to start with, Seegers and McCaw, right?
Yeah.
If Seegers would be at the 1 in that scenario, McCaw at the 2, Seegers' backup is McCaw, right?
I mean, more or less, there's those two, Poyser, and then, you know, coaches say, I think Cook is in there for some minutes as well, depending on how things break out.
And Cook's defense, I think he distributes the ball well. I don't know the year off how that's going to be. I do worry about what happens when Seegers goes to the bench. Maybe he gets fouls. McCaw slides over to the 1. That's great. It worked last year to a certain extent. But who slides in at the 2?
Well, that's where you have Ike and Cornish and potentially Jones or Morgan. Carter is also kind of a 3 that wants to shoot more, and so that can be a quote 2, because like I said, the point is to get away from positions and thinking of that as a shooting guard. You could line up Cook as the, you know, definitely defined 1, and then give him Zimmerman, Okonobo, Carter, and Jones. And who's a 2 in there? Well, nobody, but you could potentially do something with
line. If they put out Carter, Zimmerman,
there's no
and
way that exact lineup is ever going to get a minute. I'm just throwing some things out there.
The bottom line is Brewer's just way more of a traditionalist, I think. I don't think you like these hybrid lineups. Like, this goes back to last year in the NBA. I didn't do it. Just like Brewer never makes his huge bets, but I wanted to make the biggest bet on my life on the Warriors winning the NBA title, and they're like 5-1. And Brewer just could not wrap his head around, because they don't have the traditional lineup. They're going with this like positionalist.
Draymond Green freaks
you
out.
So I don't think Brewer likes the hybrid. We're just going to get the best guys out there. They can kind of do everything.
Man, so what did I said? Cook, Carter, Jones, Okonovo, Zimmerman. Yeah, that lineup's not happening.
That's going a
little. I'm going to try and I'm going to write that down somewhere just so I can take note if
it actually happens during
maybe against
a game,
like Whittier or something in the exhibition.
Like, what about like with fouls or something, and the lineup happens to be out there, and Zimmerman would be thrilled.
What would that lineup do?
That's like, what I was thinking is that Zimmerman would love it.
Yeah,
he'd be the point center, as he called himself a couple years ago. I don't know. I don't think that one's going to happen. Should we shift gears here? Because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about basketball.
Did you see photos of the hike?
Yeah. Yep. They went to Mount Charleston together. Although, didn't see Todd Simon or Dave Rice there. So, I don't know. Maybe one of them
somebody had
a photo.
To take the picture, yes.
Could be. Or, you know, I haven't gotten the details on that to see if they had to skip for one reason or another. But I did see that. Did you see that your boy Christian Wood officially a member of the Philadelphia 76ers. That was announced today. He survived the cuts. Your thoughts?
Did Pierre survive the cuts?
I believe so, yes.
Wow. God, they are really
I'm not positive on that, though. I haven't seen the full roster. I just know Wood got in over, like, Scotty Wilbekin was one of the last cuts. But they had given...
Does that increase his guaranteed contract if he makes the team? His partially guaranteed?
I don't know how it works exactly. I was joking earlier, though. Like, should this be... obviously, you'd rather be in the NBA or not, but... Should the fact that the team that signs you is the one that's trying to lose, is that like an insult in any way, or do you just take the check and not care?
I mean, you take the check and hope you qualify for the pension.
Well, that's a ways down the road, but sure.
No, I think in the NBA, if you get three full seasons or whatever, you get a certain pension the rest of your life. Either way, that's beside the point. Good for him. Good for UNLV. I think what was lost in the decision to stay or go last year was the fact that he had a real late birthday. He was just 19 during the draft. And to be in that room on draft night and just to be passed over and passed over when a lot of people are looking at you had to have been awful. And for the fact that it worked out for him, he's one of us. Congratulations. Sincerely. I think it's awesome that another UNLV player, another Finley Prep player, one of our own, 702-HS, Hoops, baby. Kiefer, don't tell me I'm wrong.
Well, isn't that
a kid?
No. You don't even let me. You just start celebrating without even doing
it. 2 seconds of silence.
Isn't this something you – I can't remember what side you were on, but you used to bring up as are they included in the hashtag 702HSHoops conversation?
I've always said yes.
Okay, you've always said yes. I just remember that was a debate. Yeah, no, I'm happy for him, and the good thing about – yeah, you can look at it the way you're saying. If you want to be negative, like he made a team that's trying to lose. But if you want to be positive, like he's going to get some opportunities.
Yep.
He's going to play on this team. And if he does something good, I'm happy for him. And I think it sets up well.
Yeah, I think if draft night served as a wake-up call, then great. All the power to him. If, you know, if there's a work ethic and more maturity added to the skills that we all saw, Wood's got a chance. You know, and just making a team is obviously huge. Just being able to be seen, kind of put some things on tape. You would figure in Philadelphia they're going to give him an opportunity. So it's a very good sign for him, a good sign that, you know, teams were willing to give him a second chance after passing over him in the draft. And we'll see. You know, there's obviously the recent example of Anthony Bennett, who, I mean, could end up having a good year here with the Toronto Raptors, but former number one pick out of Finley, out of UNLV, is on his third NBA team, at least. Do I have that right? Cavs, Timberwolves, and Raptors. So he has third team. And so that obviously hasn't gone that well. Meanwhile, Rashad Vaughn, number 17 pick in this year's draft, all reports out of Milwaukee have been that he's doing great for them. So a few Finley to UNLV to the NBA connections going to have a chance to have either starts or fresh starts in Bennett's case this year in the NBA. So it's going to be worth following there.
I think Vaughn is in a great situation.
That's a really good team.
Yeah, I mean,
too.
They're young, up and coming. They actually don't have a lot of shooting, and I've heard he's just been tearing it up in the preseason, and they're really high on him there. They think they got even better than they expected. So I think he's in a really good position.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. You want to talk a little football before we get out of here, Ray?
We can. The Broncos of Boise State coming to Sam Boyd for a little Halloween Day matinee. Rebels 19-point dogs. Week off. Interested to see how they perform after the bye week. Having 2 weeks to game plan for Boise. A game where if they win somehow, keyword somehow, don't snap at me, I'm just talking. They all of a sudden, you know, it's a national win. Boise's the benchmark program of the Mountain West. Boise played Wyoming Saturday.
Correct.
On ESPN2, I watched part of the game. They showed Boise's facility.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's why they're in first place.
Yeah.
Amen. That's all I got to say. I don't know who's playing quarterback for UNLV, but I saw they've been offering some JC kids.
Yeah. Not a surprise.
Not a surprise,
you know,
either.
Spent their bye week going out there, and we knew that quarterback for this class, just to have another option of some kind, was going to be something that they pursued. I think it's going to be Decker. I really don't know, though. We can't really get into that. We're recording this on Monday, October 26th, the press conference, and some more info will come out Tuesday. We'll have all of that on LasVegasSun.com. This team is so close to being 4-3, and I guess if you want to throw the Northern Illinois game in there, 5-2. But looking specifically at the last two games they played in the Mountain West could be 4-3, pursuing, you know, everything pretty much being on the table, West Division, a bowl game, all that. Instead, it's 2-5, about to be 2-6, you know, going towards the finishing stretch here. One thing, as bad as it was last year overall, another two-win season and all that, a thing that I feel like's gotten lost in this whole new era and everything's different at UNLV now, last year's team didn't quit really in any game down the stretch for UNLV. And so I'm not expecting anything different from the Rebels this year after the Boise State game. You know, however this one goes, they have winnable games with Hawaii, Wyoming. That San Diego State game suddenly looking like I maybe got a decent price with that -10 there, Brewer.
Yeah, San Diego State all of a sudden looks like Ohio State.
They're doing
what
they normally do.
Disrespect by Brewer to call Boise State the first place team when I believe San Diego State is the only undefeated in the Mountain West.
They are the only undefeated. Well, yeah, they are. Yep, because they took down Utah State. But you know, chances for UNLV remain, and I think they're going to fight hard. But I also think it's worth mentioning that's something that this team did last year. So while I think Sanchez and his staff and all that deserve tons of credit for a lot of the things that they've changed, I feel like it's been kind of glossed over that last year's team had made strides. They weren't good enough to win some of those games and let a couple of bad bounces go against them, but they never quit. And so I feel like you can kind of expect the same out of a team now that's trying to get over a couple of close losses. But when you come into the year, and I know they don't buy into the 2.5 season win mark, but they know that they're not, you know, a 10 win team, something like that. So I think when you come into that, knowing that you can still get to 4, they think they can still get to 6, bowl eligibility, all that stuff. You know, there's things yet to play for them. So I think they'll come out playing well. I just don't know. You know, the defensive performance against Fresno State certainly leaves some doubt in my mind. I don't know about you, Ray.
You know what I think? If you look at the San Jose State loss, the Fresno State loss, even the Northern Illinois loss, first half, not bad. You know, they're in the games, and they just run out of gas down the stretch. To me, that's an indication that, you know, the twos are kids that, you know, Tony's trying to win with. I think when he gets some of his kids in and he's able to develop some of his kids, which you can make – the case for every first-year coach in college football, not just because I'm a Tony Sanchez homer. Who knows what's going to happen at UNLV? I mean, I'm still encouraged. I think maybe you told me, but after the Fresno game was kind of like the first time you really seen Tony be aggravated with the process. Did you say that?
I would just say it's the most angry he's been or most frustrated in a situation, but that's understandable considering the way that that game got away from them. But I don't think I've ever seen him, you know, quote, lose his cool or anything like that. He obviously yells and stuff on the sidelines, but he's always mostly composed and himself around us.
So, yeah, I'm still encouraged. They still have Hawaii on the schedule, Wyoming, an opportunity to get to 4 or 5 wins. But you think what could have been, you know? They had a lot of good chances this year. And it's going to get real interesting because the league, from what I could tell, is going to remain to be mediocre.
And I think it's going to be making a jump.
Okay. Well,
it's not going to be corrected. Well, it's not going to be this bad next year.
Yeah, it's historically crappy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quote me on that, any story you want. Mountain West expert Ray Brewer covered the league every year it's been around, says football's historically crappy.
All right, we will get out of here on that very positive note from Ray Brewer. For Case Kiefer, I'm Taylor Byrne. We'll talk to you guys next week.